if I'm a consumer, then I believe that I'm the most important person in the world. Life is about my pleasure, my comfort, my happiness. If I'm a steward of God's resources, I know that God is the most important. My life is to be about Him, to be about glorifying Him, to living in relationship with Him, to honoring Him.
Well, that's a pretty stark contrast, isn't it? When it comes to how I think about money and stuff, how do I identify? Am I a consumer or am I seeking to steward what God has entrusted me with? And what am I teaching my kids about all this? Our guest today is the managing editor at Sound Mind Investing. Matt Bell spends his days helping equip parents to teach their kids the purpose of money and how to pursue biblical financial priorities. I'm pretty sure I'm going to need to take some notes on this one.
So Matt, welcome to the conversation this morning.
Thanks so much, Stan. Great to be with you.
Yeah, looking forward to our time and our topic specifically. First of all, I want to ask, what got you into writing? I think for most people, writing is a chore, right? We go back to school and reports that we had to write, and it wasn't super fun for most of us. So I'm always intrigued.
Yeah, I think it's something that I think kind of came naturally when I was a kid. Both of my parents were teachers. They were communicators. That probably was in my blood. And it's just, you have kids, we have kids, you see some natural things come out, ways that God has wired us, and communication was something that it's something I loved from an early age. I remember I got involved in a retreat program in my teens, and I loved to speak at those retreats. And so I've just always really loved the whole communication process.
Yeah. So, and Matt, you just released a book called Trusted, Preparing Your Kids for a Lifetime of God-Honoring Money Management. Why write that book? What did you see? What were you experiencing that said, I think this book needs to be written?
Yeah. Well, my whole story of coming to faith was through money. God used money to draw me into a relationship with Him. As I like to put it, I kind of did this unintentional reenactment of the Bible's parable of the prodigal son. Received an inheritance from an uncle when I was in my mid-20s of $60,000. Had good intentions with that money, but used it to create a dream job of traveling and golfing, writing a golf newsletter. And it was great. It was a lot of fun. Got to play Pebble Beach and some great courses, but was not attracting very many paid subscribers, which seemed like a minor detail because I had this huge pile of money. 2 years after inheriting the money, I had $20,000 of credit card debt. I had just become so acclimated to that life and so blind to what was happening with the money that when the actual money ran out, I kept funding it on credit cards. Mm-hmm. And that was a very humbling, life-changing experience. It was ultimately what God used to draw me into a relationship with Him. It woke me up to my need to learn about money. And I've been studying ever since. The first church I went to had a stewardship ministry, which I had never heard of before. I've heard of churches asking for money, but I never heard about them teaching about money. And so ever since that experience in my mid-20s, I've just been a sponge for all things financial, and especially what the Bible teaches. And the idea of helping kids get on a good path with money. Like I said, I made a lot of mistakes. And so I'm really excited about all the potential good that God could do in and through young people who get on a good track with money early in life.
Yeah. If you think about it, the presupposition of this book is that parents are going to be investing in their kids' development, training, specifically in terms of money. What's the risk to our kids if we don't invest in really training our kids financially?
The thing is that if we don't teach our kids about money, it isn't that they won't learn. They will learn, but they'll learn from our consumer culture, which has these strong messages of you don't have enough and even you're not enough, which has just been amplified through social media. So there's a risk. There's a really strong risk that if we're not the ones doing the teaching, the culture will be teaching them.
Wow. That's a great point, brother. I didn't know where your mind would go with that question, but it is interesting to think about that fact. It's not it's not going to happen. It's going to happen. Do we want to happen intentionally or incidentally, right? And correctly, accurately, or incorrectly? And yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. And I also think that there's so much potential here. You think about usually when you think about the concepts of compounding or exponential returns, we think in the world of investing. But think about all the different aspects of money. So you get a young person who develops a heart of compassion for some of the things that God cares about and backs that heart of compassion with some generous habits and practices. How God could multiply that over her lifetime of, and not just the tangible financial investment she makes in these causes, but just and how her generous heart ripples out into her other relationships and how it infuses her life with great joy. There's just so much potential good that could come from a young person getting on a good track early in life.
So I want to meddle now in the parents' lives, because as we're talking this morning about really helping our kids develop well and right and thinking well, acting right, thinking right about finances, it's got to go back to us as parents at the beginning first. And like, so what if I, as a parent, I'm listening to this, I'm like going, I'm not very good with money. Like, how am I going to train my kid about money if I'm not very good at it?
That's right. I think that's a really common concern among a lot of parents. And so I would say a couple things to parents feeling that, because I think that is very real, a big common concern. I would say, for one thing, none of us ever get the money thing fully right. We're always in process. We're learning more. We're understanding more about what God's word teaches and how that maps on in really practical ways in our daily lives. For someone struggling with money, maybe with a lot of debt and feeling like, you know, wow, I'm the last person that should be teaching my kids about money. Every really practical chapter in the book, the first portion is written to parents because of these things that I just want to encourage parents that there are ways to get on a good path. I mean, I struggled with money, as I shared. I had $20,000 of credit card debt at one time. And so that's why I wanted to speak to parents, to encourage them, to give them some kind of rails to run on for themselves, because being a role model is such an important thing. But I just want to also really come alongside parents and encourage them that they are the best teacher. And even if you have kids of a certain age, middle school, high school, it's fine to be transparent about it, to say, hey, mom and dad are in process with this too. We're learning new things. We're getting out of debt. We can share those things with our kids.
Yeah, I love that. We can learn along with our kids. So whether we are at a good place or whether we're at a place that we need some tune up in terms of money management, you hear a lot in our world of parents who spiritually get on track because they have kids and they realize, you know what, I want my kid to go to church. And so the parents go to church, and that's a great thing. And the whole family gets deeper in their relationship with God. So finances can be the same way, that it's a good motivator. If you're going like, I want my kids to handle money well, not like I have up to this point, then let's dive in together. Let's learn and explore and get better together.
That is such a great point. And that's one of the motivators for writing the book, because I know that if you do a financial workshop at church, you'll attract certain people, but maybe not as many people as would benefit from it. And so we all, those of us who have kids, we love our kids. We want to be an encouragement to our kids, to teach them, to role model for them, to kind of walk the journey with them. And so I love the idea that some parents could be attracted to the idea of, hey, let's learn more ourselves about this whole idea of what God's word teaches on money and how to apply that in our lives alongside with the process of teaching our kids about that.
Yeah. You touched on it a little bit earlier this morning, but I'd love for you to go back into, and we're in it, we experience it, we see it, we also adapt to it and we get used to it, the culture that's always thrusting itself on us in the culture's perspective of material things and money and the impact it has on our lives and our kids' lives. I know you've thought a lot about it, you've written about it in the book as well. So just kind of bring us into that and help us kind of re-wake up to those forces that we need to be aware of and we need to help our kids be aware of.
Is huge. The culture has a very strong impression on us, all of us. You know, I think about the word consumer. So We hear that term so often that I think we've become, you know, kind of comfortable with the idea of, with that label. And yet it wasn't always true that we were called consumers. Back in the early 1900s, things changed a lot. And that's when people went from being described as citizens or workers to being described as consumers. And it was very wrapped up in a lot of things happening in the whole marketing world at that time. So I like to draw the distinction between being a consumer versus being a steward or manager or wise builder, as the Bible talks about. And there are some really stark differences. So if I'm a consumer, then I believe that I'm the most important person in the world. Life is about my pleasure, my comfort, my happiness. If I'm a steward of God's resources, I know that God is the most important person in the world. My life is to be about Him, to be about glorifying Him, to living in relationship with Him, to honoring Him. If I'm a consumer, I believe it's money and things that bring happiness. But if I'm a steward of God's resources, I know it's relationships that bring joy in life. And if I'm a consumer, I believe I'm in competition. You know, that's kind of the driving force to have more than I used to have, more than others have. I'm in a competition for more, whereas God's word teaches us that our lives are not about competition, but about contribution, about using our gifts and talents and passions to make a difference with our lives. And so these may be kind of heady, abstract concepts, but they're really important for our kids, for us to understand who we were made to be and to live into that identity, because our identity drives so much of our behavior.
Wow.
God is always at work among us.
To help a child recover from abuse and neglect, intervention must go both deep and wide. Royal Family Kids Camp goes deep, immersing current and former children in foster care in positive memories and planting seeds of God's truth. Royal Family Kids Mentoring Club goes wide, establishing ongoing monthly connection between these children and a mentor. McKinsey, who goes by Mac, had a mentee of 2 years in Kearney who was about to age out of the club. So they both were wrestling with that season coming to a close.
The end of the year, you're like, I'm not going to see this kid anymore. And it's that hard feeling of this is goodbye.
Then Mac got a text from her mentee with an invitation.
I did not know that he was going to a youth group throughout that whole school year. And through youth group and coupling that with Royal Family and Mentoring Club, he had gotten saved.
And he wanted Mac and his big camper from Royal Family Kids Camp to be a part of this milestone.
All these people who had been a part of his Royal Family journey were there and got to witness this. And it was super, super cool.
God is on the move through Royal Family Kids as they go deep and wide through camp and mentoring, immersing current and former children in foster care in environments that provide royal treatment, create positive memories, and plant seeds of God's truth.
God is doing something right now.
MyBridge Radio, celebrating God at work among us. Share your story and join the conversation in the Connect Now section at mybridgeradio.net.
Matt, we were just talking about the whole consumer mentality and really shifting that to, from a biblical standpoint. Let's talk also about just contentment. And again, advertising, it was a number of years ago, I can't remember what I was looking at, but I was looking at this magazine or something, and it was one of the first times that I just, in that moment, realized all of a sudden I had this discontentment with what I had that I didn't have like 2 minutes ago. I mean, it wasn't even on my screen. And all of a sudden I found myself wanting something, not being satisfied with some level of something I already had. And it was strictly because of the advertising I just exposed myself to. So yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts about that. And then how do we manage that for ourselves and for our kids?
Yeah, I appreciate your authenticity about that, because we've all been there. We're there on a regular basis. Yeah. And that's how the marketing machine works in our culture, is that it's to drive a sense of discontentedness so that we want to buy more and to try to fill that longing that we all feel. And so, you know, I think the best antidote, the strongest antidote to our consumer culture is gratitude. That if we can model that for our kids, live in gratitude, if we can encourage our kids to live from a perspective of gratitude, that there are so many gifts that God gives us every day, that's a really strong, powerful force that works against this notion of discontentedness that is so prevalent in our culture. Because it is so easy to make the mistake of thinking that these things are going to drive happiness. Things are not inherently good or bad. Money is not inherently good or bad. It's what we do with those things. It's how we think about those things. And if we can come from a perspective of gratitude that everything belongs to God, it's to be used for his purposes, it's to be enjoyed as children of his. He wants us to enjoy good things in this life, but he wants us not to make them first in our lives. And that's a really important distinction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I love that, the whole fight back, push back against, this dissatisfaction with gratitude. Yeah. Is there some wisdom too of just limiting our exposure to some of the advertisement and not just taking it in mindlessly?
Yeah, for sure. And that's where in the book, I talk about these three roles, the gatekeeper, the teacher, and the role model. And the gatekeeper is the one that kind of sets the parameters. I mean, we're the parents. And there's a book that I've never even read, and yet it speaks to me about this. It's called Be the Parent. And that motivates me. So we're the ones that set the parameters, set the rules. So are we going to let our kids be on social media? What are we doing about screen time? I'm a strong believer that screens should not be in our kids' bedrooms, for example. There should be transparency. There should be openness and accountability for those sorts of things. And we should help our kids navigate these messages in our culture. And so when a kid is super young, they don't even know the distinction between programming and advertising messages. And those lines have been blurred a lot through just woven into storylines of movies and even video games and such. So help them make the distinction between here's a marketing message and here's the content of the program, and then help them unpack messages that they're taking in. Are these things really real? Will I really, you know, play sports to the level of a professional athlete if I own this equipment, if I own these shoes, that sort of thing? Just help them unpack the culture, because we have to live in the world, but the key is to not be of the world. So helping our kids kind of learn to not be at the effect of so much marketing that we all experience, but learn to interpret it and make wise decisions about it would be a good thing.
Yeah, that's good. Allowance or no allowance? That is the question. What part is it about you just being part of the family? And you ate today, you have a bed to sleep in, you have clothes in your back. Right. So give us some kind of wisdom on allowance and how to maybe perspective on how to work that.
It's a surprisingly contentious topic. There are parents that have very strong views on this, so we need to kind of wade into these waters a little bit carefully. But you know, some people say, well, you know, allowance, that word should never be spoken in our household, because in life, people won't just give our kids money, right? They have to work for everything that they receive. There are different perspectives on this. In our household, my wife Jude and I, we did give our kids a small amount of money just because they're part of the family. And as you were just describing, they were required to do certain chores around the house just because they're part of the family. But the amount that we gave them as an allowance was so small, really, that it gave them, it was enough to get some hands-on experience with money, but it wasn't so much that they weren't motivated then to do extra chores to earn more money. We have some friends that have another system that I really like, and that is where they have mandatory no-pay jobs. That would be things like making your bed in the morning. They have mandatory four-pay jobs. That would be things like clearing the dishwasher. And then they have optional four-pay jobs. And what's kind of cool about their system is that if a kid's doing a mandatory four-pay job, but they do it with a bad attitude, or they have to be asked three or four times to do it, that might turn into a mandatory for less-pay job or a mandatory for no-pay job. And so the key thing here is we want money in our kids' hands so that they're doing real things, making real decisions with money that's really theirs. And another key with the allowance thing, or whatever you want to call it, is that we want them to tie money with a job well done. So you're not just going to do that job half-heartedly. You're going to do that with a good attitude. You're going to do it with excellence. And then you'll be compensated for that job if that's a four-pay job. Otherwise, you might get less pay. Or as like I said, with our friends, it might turn into a no-pay job. So I think the important thing is to find a system that works for you and your spouse, and then be consistent about applying it.
Yeah, that's good. And I like what you were saying there. It does need to connect and help our kids get ready for the real world, right? So however we think about it, I remember I have conversations with one of my daughters where it was like, okay, the real world isn't that you sit around and do nothing and have a nice house and food and clothing and cars and all that stuff, right? So that's not reality. So right. We got to be really careful that we allow our kids to experience reality in the home so that they're prepared for reality when they get out of the home. So in a different kind of way, as far as helping our kids get ready and be able to handle and learn to handle money, one thing that I thought was interesting, I think if I was doing this whole parent thing all over again, I think I probably would incorporate this also, of saying, hey, we're going to spend, on a typical year, we're going to spend $200 on our kids' clothes, whatever that number is, $100, $150. In a sense, give that to our kids and say, this is your clothes allowance for the year. If you buy one pair of jeans that cost $250, those are all the new clothes you're getting for the next year, right? So just as far as them learning to handle money well, you're going to spend it anyway on them, but just to kind of integrate their development. What are your thoughts about that concept?
So important. I'm glad you're bringing that up. You know, that's something I learned from another author, Mary Hunt, in her book, Raising Financially Confident Kids, where she talked about that very idea, Stan, where you take something like clothing, that's a great starting point, and you say, we're going to spend, you know, maybe $25 a month on kids' clothing. Well, now we're going to give that money to them. And so we did that with our kids. They had an envelope. They put their $25 a month in that envelope. We would go clothing shopping with them, and they would have those envelopes with them. That makes it so much more real than if we were just managing that $25 for them. You know, that's too abstract. But when it's in their hands, and like you said, they're making trade-offs between this expensive pair of jeans or whatever it is versus, you know, two of these. Those are real decisions. Those are real trade-offs that they're making. And now they're paying the money to the cashier. They're getting their change back. There's so much learning that goes on in that process. I remember the first time we did that with our kids, it was so moving. I mean, people think, you know, it's silly to tear up about this, but I was watching them make these decisions in new ways. I mean, they'd been with us before the store, but now it was so much more real that it was just powerfully moving to see them navigating these decisions. So I met another couple in writing the book that took that whole idea even further. Every year on their daughter's birthday, they would give her responsibility for another category. So it started with clothing, went to personal care items, went to entertainment. And over time, she became responsible and making good decisions in all these areas. So I think that's just a great real world way of teaching kids about money. And the more real we can make it for kids, the better.
Yeah, it's really good. I like that. Where were you when I was parenting?
Look, believe me, I'm so glad I met so many parents doing so many wise things in the course of writing this book. It made me feel that way. I've been writing and teaching about money for a while, and yet I heard so many other great ideas. I thought, oh, I wish I had known that earlier in this journey.
So you thought, wrote, interacted, had conversations around money and with parents and families around money. What's one of the biggest mistakes you feel like we as parents can unintentionally, obviously we don't ever want to make mistakes or mess up our kids in any way, but what's one of the biggest mistakes you'd say that you see parents do in terms of money with their kids?
Wow, tough to choose just one, but the one that comes to mind would be doing too much for our kids. When a kid, especially when a kid's super young, the things they want, they're not very expensive. It's easy for us to buy these things that they want, and yet it would be so much better if, I mean, sure, you know, it's not like we're going to never buy them a present or something. Of course, we're still going to be generous. But if we can encourage them and really make it a requirement for them to own more and more of this and purchase more and more by having to wait, by having to save over time, we will do them such a great service. So I think one of the biggest mistakes we can make is doing too much for our kids and keeping that kind of bank of mom and dad open too long. Far better for them to start taking responsibility and taking the time. I mean, delayed gratification is one of the most powerful character traits. If they can learn to save over time to buy these things, it will serve them really, really well.
Some days, folding those tiny baby clothes reminds you of when your child was a dream you weren't sure would ever come true.
Other days, you can't believe how many loads of laundry a tiny human can produce.
For those days, make sure you get connected to help you shift your perspective.
Shift your perspective.
Download the MyBridge Radio app.
Press play.
Simple.
So where does entitlement come from? And I asked that question because I had a friend of mine who had an actually a foster daughter who had never had anything, right? And so I would have thought that she would have been grateful and thankful for whatever that she received. But she had a very strong sense of entitlement. It really surprised me. So the easy answer would be by parents giving kids stuff without them having to work for it or whatever. But I've saw entitlement in someone who didn't have parents that were there for them, who had never given them anything, and yet they too had a sense of entitlement.
Yeah, that's one of the most important kind of ways of thinking for us to be intentional about trying to avoid in our kids, and it's hard. I mean, you're right. I mean, part of it, the kind of easy answer is doing too much for our kids, but I think it's just in the air we breathe. It's in the culture. It's in the comparison game. You know, people say we don't really live our lives in an absolute sense. We live by comparison. We can't really help it to some degree that we're always noticing how we're doing compared to others. And especially as kids start to go to school or just in the neighborhood, they see other kids with more stuff and they're just, you know, wanting those things. They're seeing that they don't have as much as these other kids have. And they start to feel kind of entitled to these things. So I go back to gratitude. I think if we can model that for our kids, that we're truly grateful for the things that we have, if we can encourage them as we pray with them, perhaps as we're getting them ready for bed, encourage them to be praying with us and giving thanks for the things that they have. I think also, you know, living a life of generosity where We're aware of the needs in this world. You don't want to use that in a manipulative way. You don't want to, you know, talk about people that have less and make our kids feel guilty. But we just want to introduce them to the real world that in many ways, some of us are living in a false world because we're not regularly seeing people in a very different situation. So if we can bring our kids some awareness of that, that would be a good thing. And one of the things we've tried to do in our household to foster a sense of generosity and a heart of generosity, and I think it helps in this whole area of entitlement, is we've sponsored some kids in different parts of the world. And there's different organizations that offer that, Compassion International, World Vision, and there are some others. You know, we build a relationship with these kids. They're in a very different place in the world. There's one that we've sponsored in Burkina Faso. It becomes a geography lesson. But one year we sent some extra money for a birthday, and this child Aziz, he sent us back a picture of what he bought with that extra money. He bought rice and he bought soap for his family.
Wow.
How many of our kids would buy rice and soap with a little extra money? So again, we don't want to guilt our kids into it. We don't want to use it in a manipulative sense. But we want to just have that be part of the rhythm of our lives, that we're aware and we're helping our kids be aware of kids that are living very differently in different parts of the world, even in our own cities.
Yeah. So, Matt, I'd love your thoughts about the differences from a personality standpoint with our kids. And again, I think about my kids. I've got a daughter who's just... She does not spend money. Like, she didn't have to train it in her. She's just super conservative, just on her own personality wiring wise. She saves. I mean, she probably has some money from high school, and she's, you know, 32 years old now. She's just naturally frugal with finances. And now I have, you know, a daughter who's not so much, we'll just say. She's not as frugal. She spends a little more freely, and it's more of a discipline. She does a good job. She does, but it's more of a discipline for her. How do we think about that in terms of our kids?
It's a fascinating topic. I think if you really study the way God has wired you up, and then as parents study how God has wired up our kids, it's fascinating. There's different temperament methods out there. In the book, I talk about probably the simplest one, where there are these four different temperaments. Every time I say there's four, then I forget which one of them. But let's see. So it's the sanguine, yeah, and the choleric, and the phlegmatic, and the melancholy.
Wow, there you go.
Got them. And these are not good or bad. These are not, you know, one's better than another. It's none of that. It's just different. It's how God has made us. And so and when it comes to money, there are certain financial tendencies that come with each of these temperaments. So you mentioned you have a daughter that's a real saver. So probably a primary phlegmatic temperament, because phlegmatics tend to keep things. They tend to hang on to things. And so there's some good and bad in that, right? There's an easier experience with saving money, but there may be a difficulty in giving money.
Right.
And yet when phlegmatic temperament types have been kind of led by the Spirit to give, they can end up giving very generously. Sanguine type is kind of the outgoing, life of the party, and really enjoyable sort of person. That person financially, very generous, naturally generous, doesn't like to budget. You know, that's too analytical. They would rather be out with their friends than doing something analytical like that. And so it's fascinating to learn how God has wired us up, to learn to maximize our inherent strengths and put those to productive use. And it's helpful to learn to kind of manage around some of the inherent challenges that come with these different temperaments.
Yeah, it's interesting as you were talking there, Matt, because, you know, again, I think most of us would be wired to think, when we start thinking about our kids, that we go, okay, what does it mean to train our kids with kids? Budgeting, spending responsibly, da da da. Versus, like, no, actually, you may have a kid that's like too anal about saving and, you know, quote unquote, being responsible with money, but so much so that you need to teach them to lighten up, to be more generous, to enjoy the gifts that God's given them a little bit more, you know. And it's probably not we need to invest in our kids financially as far as their financial handling of money. It's how, right? Based on which kid we have and how they're wired.
That's exactly right, because it's not one size fits all parenting, and it applies in so many areas, not just money. But yeah, I think about, you know, our oldest is doesn't care about fashion. We have to kind of beg him to update his clothing, his look, you know. So he's kind of naturally wired to save. We have our second is more outgoing, and what comes with that temperament is really interested in how he looks and the brands. And so, look, it's fine. You know, it's fine to have the brands you like, but let's not pay full price. Let's get them on discount. Let's go to the sale rack in the back of the store. You know, let's get the good stuff. That's fine, but let's not overspend in doing it. So there again, it's like it's difficult to kind of go against our natural bent in life, but it's helpful, you know, to not be at the effect of it, to understand it so that we can start to work with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, Matt, again, thank you so much for our time today. Thank you for investing yourselves for years and sharing that wealth with us in your new book. We're excited about it.
Well, it's my pleasure, Stan. Really great to talk with you.
We know your time is valuable, so we're grateful you chose to spend some of it listening to Morning Conversation, the podcast. If God used this content to bless you, we'd love to have you share it with a friend. Also, when you click subscribe or follow, not only will our next episode be delivered to your podcast app, you'll help raise awareness so others can more easily find this podcast. For more conversations like this, along with songs of hope and stories of God at work, we invite you to listen to MyBridge Radio. Hear it on the MyBridge Radio app or listen online at mybridgeradio.net.